Good evening, everyone. We'll be beginning with the session in a few minutes. The session is on interactive analytics at scale in Apache Hive using Druid. The session will be delivered by Jesus Camacho Rodriguez. He's a committer for Calcite and Hive. So please give a big round of applause for him, and we'll begin with the session. Thank you.
Thank you for the kind introduction. Second talk today. So my name is Jesus Camacho Rodriguez. I'm a senior engineer at Hortonworks, and I'm also Apache Calcite PMC chair and Apache Hive PMC member. And you know, I'm involved in several efforts actually surrounding the optimizer. And today I'm going to talk about some of this effort that is towards integrating Hive with Druid. So first of all, acknowledgements. So this is really a teamwork and three different communities coming together, Hive, Apache Calcite, and Druid. The work on the implementation of the Druid adapter, we'll see afterwards, for Apache Calcite, so basically the integration between Calcite and Druid, was started by Julian Hyde. Slim has been and continues working, helping on indexing data from Hive into Druid. And also, yeah, thank you to the Druid community because they really started testing everything and gave a lot of early feedback. This is always very, very useful. And yeah, also a couple of mates, Nishant and Carter, that shared some slides of previous Druid talks, especially about the Druid content itself. So let's get started. So what's the motivation behind this? So there are a lot of BI tools and OLAP applications that require or that you would like to have interactive visualization of complex data streams, okay? So you have your streams of data usually with a time dimension, and what you want to use is some kind of dashboard or interface on top in order to show, for instance, some progression or discover some patterns and so on. And you know, these data streams, so some examples, so real-time binding events, they, as you can see, they all have a time dimension. User activity streams, all kind of logs, voice call logs, network traffic logs, application performance metrics. However, querying all this event data at large scale, when you have on top such a dashboard or tool that will auto-generate the query, poses multiple challenges. Now, so what was done before in the open source community, we could see like two different trends. One was using traditional relational database management systems, such as Postgres or MySQL. And what we would do there is that basically you create the typical star schema with fact and dimension tables, and then you will query actually these tables probably using many joins and some aggregation on top and calculating some metrics. The problem is that basically this solution doesn't scale. So when you have really large data sets, you will not get good performance. Some people, actually, this has been studied, and some people, what they try to do, for instance, is do results caching, which could improve the latency for some of your queries, but ad hoc queries will still run slow. And then there are other solutions that either use directly key value stores or rely on key value stores, Apache HBase or Cassandra. And then what they do in this case is that when you are ingesting the data, you will pre-aggregate create all the aggregation on the old dimensional combinations. This indeed can actually get a very quick response time. But the problem now is that when you are ingesting, the pre-computation will scale exponentially. And you will have a problem if, for instance, you want to analyze data that came in at the system very recently, right? Because it will require a long time to index the data in these systems, And also it's not cost effective because you are pre-materializing all the dimensional combinations. So obviously this will explode, even if you have systems that scale quite well. So that's where Druid came in, okay? So just a little bit of an overview on the system. So Druid starts in 2011, and it's by Meta Markets, and it's open source in late 2012. And since then, it has, it has been widely adopted by multiple organizations at scale. The initial use case was interactive ad analytics, so they had some dashboard, and they wanted to show analytics on some advertisement. Currently, it has more than 150 different contributors, and some of the main features or things that make Druid kind of special. So it's a column. It uses a column-oriented distributed data storage, so it can actually compute, metrics on the columns really, really fast. It supports batch and real-time ingestion. It's scalable, so it's been, tested with petabytes of data. But it's still, the most important is that it scales very well. So it is still will get sub-second response times for this amount of data. And always remember that Druid is actually for time-based data. So you always have to have the time dimension, and you'll usually do some queries that are slice and dice over this dimension. And, well, internally, the data is partitioned by the time. That's how actually they get to be so quick, so fast. And there is some, when you do the ingestion, there is some automatic summarization where you actually will pre-compute some of the values and you will actually create some internal indexing structures that will make you be able to discard what they call segments that are like partitions on the time very quickly. And yeah, they also use some approximate algorithms in order to calculate some of the results for these aggregations. So how does the architecture look like from the higher level? So here you can see the data and queries, the flow for the data and for the queries. So let's start actually with indexing data. It's the most logical part to start with. So as I said before, you have real-time ingestion and you have batch ingestion. So for the batch data, you could use Hadoop or Spark that will actually spin some jobs or some tasks in your cluster and will actually materialize or create the segments and the indexes for the data and will store them in what we can call deep storage. So it has several connectors, so S3, HDFS, Cassandra, Google Compute Cloud. On the other side, it also supports streaming data that is streaming directly. So that one goes to the real-time nodes. That what they do is creating the segments in memory, and as data come, they will continue actually growing these segments, these partitions. And at some point, when the segments become some time period has passed, so this segment, for instance, will contain data for the last hour, for instance. After this hour has passed, what it happens is that Druid will move the segments to the deep storage. Okay, the real nodes will actually persist this into the deep storage. Then how do queries work? So usually what you have in front of Druid is a dashboard or a BI tool. So there are Pivot or Caravel by Airbnb actually that has been open source rather recently. They support Druid. They can emit queries to Druid. And actually the queries will hit the broker nodes. And this broker, or one of the broker nodes, and this broker node, what it will do is retrieve some data from the historical nodes and from the real time, depending on the kind of query that you have. And then it will, the historical and the real time are actually the ones that do most of the computation, but depending on your query, there is some computation that might go on in the broker, and then that's basically returned to the dashboard or BI tool. And yeah, just would like to add that, all these nodes, you can have multiple instances. So you don't have like a single point of failure, and in principle, the system can scale quite well. Okay, so going into the persistent storage. So I already mentioned this a little bit. So how does, this is important for Druid, how does Druid store the data? It will store the data in segment files, what they call in segment files, and each of the segments is partitioned by time. So you actually, as a user, you can decide whether you want to partition by day, by hour, or maybe you even want to do some random partitioning. You can define your own function. And at the end, what happens is that in each segment, you get one of these granularities, right? So here, for instance, it would be by day, and you get one day in each segment. Also, you can specify like a maximum size for the segment. And then what happens is actually that you will create different shards for the segment. So imagine that you have a limit of, I don't know, it goes by size, but let's say 2,000 records. So then when you have more than 2,000, you will basically create a new shard in the same segment, and you will store your new records over there. So that's basically internally how Druid will store the data. And then within each segment, what you have is this. So you have the timestamp column that, as we said, it's mandatory. So you need to define a timestamp column. You have dimensions. In this case, for instance, you have page, username, gender, and city. And then you have some metrics, right, on which you will want to do some aggregation. And then apart from these three kind of columns, you have indexes that are actually the ones that will speed up all the lookup within the segments and the navigation. Also, thanks to these indexes, you can discard segments very quickly and data very quickly. So that's how you actually can scan the data so fast, and how you can actually scale to such large data sets. Now, how do you query Druid? So that's one of the things. So right now, it's something that we kind of see as a limitation. So you have to use a REST API. And what you will do is emit your queries in JSON, and you will receive your results also in JSON. So you have multiple query types. So time boundary, for instance, you actually emit it against the data source, and it will tell you what is the min and max time in your data set. Segment metadata will give you some information about the segments. And these are like more typical kind of queries. Time series, like, you know, in order to check the evolution of a certain, for instance, metric over a period of time, for instance, every day for a period of time. Top end query, group by, select. So these are all the kind of queries that you have in Druid. Actually, you have more. These are the ones that we use for the Hive integration. And one thing that is very important, and I want to highlight, is that Druid doesn't have any concept of optimizer. So sometimes you can express the same query using, for instance, a group by or a top end query, but the performance is not the same. It will not be able to do any kind of reasoning on the query and to say, okay, you know, this I could execute it as a top end and it would be much more efficient. So it is important that when you specify the query, you specify the kind of query that you want to use, knowing that you will obtain a totally different performance. And yeah, this is just how the query looks like. You specify the query type, data source that is like the table over which you want to run the query, dimensions. This is a top-end query, so the threshold, you want the top 10. Some metric that actually you compute here, number of characters that you have added, and you can also, obviously, you can filter the interval, the time interval. So now, why Druid plus Hive? After I have introduced a bit Druid, and you know, probably you are a bit familiar also with Hive, we think that actually this makes sense because it will bring benefits to both systems alike. And what I mean with this is, so first of all, indexing complex query results in Druid using Hive. So, you know, at the beginning we were focusing mostly on the query, but we realized that users were complaining a lot about the indexing process. They were complaining that it was kind of broken because what the kind of workflow that they had to follow is, you know, I have my data, for instance, sitting on HDFS. I will do some pre-computation with Spark or Hive. I materialize the result. Then I will bring an indexer node from Druid that will take this data, will index and create these segments. And after I've done all this, finally, I can query my data. So, you know, it's a lot of moving parts, and this is never good. So the good thing using Hive is that you will be able to say, create external table in Druid as I define my query over the data that is sitting in Hive, and Hive will do all the work for me. It will compute the results of the query, and it will materialize them in Druid, and you are ready to query it. Further, you will introduce a SQL interface on top of Druid. So as I said, when you query Druid, currently, what you had, actually, there are several SQL interfaces already out there, but the supported interface by default is this REST API, which works well for some dashboards and BI tools that already support emitting these queries to Druid, but you have to think that many of these tools have actually been designed to work with SQL. So we want actually to move towards the standard so all these tools can benefit from Druid and can take advantage of the system. Important also, being able to execute complex operations on Druid data. So Druid is very good at what we said, so slice and dice over the time dimension. But it doesn't support some complex operations that you might want to do, like, for instance, joins. And this can happen. Imagine that some data will come. I mean, you have actually created some data source in Druid, but then some other data come, and maybe you want to do some correlation within this new data. And if you cannot do complex operations on top of this data, what you will have to do is to destroy your data source or delete your data source and rematerialize the data source in Druid. And obviously, you don't want to do that. And finally, also benefits for Hive, because it will bring efficient execution of this kind of OLAP queries, which actually, Hive doesn't have a way to handle them so well. So now let's go to how do we index data. Or how can we actually show the data that is in Druid in Hive or materialize the data from Hive. So the user, the first thing that he has to do when he opens the system is actually to provide the data sources into Hive. And there are two ways of doing this. Either you register, I mean, your data is already sitting in Druid and you register it in Hive, or the data is stored in Hive, and what you want to do is to create some Druid sources from this data, probably doing some pre-processing before materializing them in Druid. So let's go into detail on these two options. So first of all, so registering Druid data sources. So the data is sitting in Druid, and what you're going to do is just use this simple create external table statement. So it's standard Hive. You create an external table that you call Druid table one. You specify that it's going to be stored by the Druid storage handler. That is what we implemented. And then you pass a table property. In this case, is the data source, right? So you have this data source in Druid, WikiTicker, and what you are going to create is a Druid table one in Hive that you can query and that will refer to this data source. Once again, the only thing that you need to do is to specify the broker node endpoint, that is the one that will actually answer for queries in Druid. And also another cool thing, as you can see, is that here we don't have to specify the schema. So there is automatic schema discovery. What the storage handler will do underneath is that it will query Druid in order to get the schema of the data. And with this schema of the data, it will actually create the table. So you don't have to worry about anything. Now there is the second way to go, that is creating Druid data sources. That is more powerful, right? And this, once again, we use standard Hive, create table as select. So the first part is the same, create table, druid table one, store by the storage handler, and some in the table properties, you specify the data source that in this occasion you want to create. And then you have the select query. Okay, this is a very simple query. You are just selecting from some source. And here you can see that you have the timestamp dimension. The timestamp dimension. Then you have two other dimensions, page and user, and some metrics that are the characters added and the characters removed. And how we infer which columns, I mean, currently at least, how we infer which columns are dimensions and metrics and timestamp is by the types of the columns that come out of the query. So this will be type timestamp. Metrics will be either long or double. And then the dimensions will be all the rest. This is how we do it right now. In the future, probably we want to kind of provide some, because you know, right now, actually, those are also the types that that Druid is providing, but they are actually extending it. So probably at the end, we will end up giving the user some flexibility so they can specify in the table properties which columns they want that are the dimensions, the metrics, and so on. But this is how it currently works. And now, what happens underneath is this. So you had your query, right? And this was your original select query. It was just, you know, you had some table scan on the sources, some select, and the file sync. This is for the create table statement. And these are your query results, okay? So you have the time dimension, page and user, and the characters added and removed. Now, what we do actually underneath is that the file sync will use the Druid output format, which will create segment files and register them in Druid. So in order to do that, the file sync, actually before the file sync, we'll need to partition the data by time granularity. And yes, this granularity currently is specified as a configuration parameter. So the user, depending on the kind of queries that he's going to execute, he will have to specify whether he wants, for instance, to store it by day, by hour, by second, you name it. And this is something that Druid users have to do anyway right now. So though it's true that maybe in the future, depending on workloads, maybe we can try to do something automatic, but not right now. So basically, assume that we are actually going to index by day granularity. So we will actually introduce a reduce that what we'll do is extracting the granularity from the time dimension. So for instance, this is the 1st of January, 2nd of January, 1st of January, and so on and so forth. And we create a new column that is the time granularity. And then, I mean, that reduce, what we'll do is actually partition by that granularity. And like that, we can create the segments per the granularity, yeah, right? So you'll have one segment for the 1st of January with two records, and then another segment for the 2nd of January with three different records. So this we do actually at the optimization phase. We introduce this reduce that will partition the data, and then the file sync is responsible to create these segments that are already in the format that Druid understands. So it will create all the internal indexes and so on, and it will materialize it to, it's a file sync, so for instance, to HDFS, and they will immediately be, these sources will immediately be available to query from Hive, also from Druid. Now, the other side, how do we query Druid data sources from Hive? So these are the different parts, and we'll go into detail in the following slides. So your query comes, and it is expressed over a Druid table. And the first thing that you have to do is actually rewrite it or identify which patterns of this query, of this logical plan, you can actually push to Druid. Because think that not all computation, we will be able to push it to Druid. Like I told you, there are operations that are not supported, maybe even UDFs, predicates. So we have actually to check all these patterns and to check actually what we can push, which computation of the plan we can push into Druid. And also, as we said before, important to identify the different kind of Druid queries because they will give or they will yield different performance. So it's very important also to recognize that. Once we have done that, we will translate the plan of operators that we can push into Druid into a JSON query. That is what Druid understands. And the query itself is cool because it's just encapsulated within a table scan operator. So, you know, for Hive, it's completely transparent. It will not realize anything. It will just go there. And then the Hive table scan, what it uses is a Druid input format that we implemented. That what it does is that it will submit the query to Druid, and with the JSON results, it will create records. It will create the records that will go through the Hive pipeline, and we can do operations with these records. The current implementation, the parallelization is limited because we don't bypass the broker. As I said, when you submit queries to Druid, you always go through the broker that will be the one that will send the queries to the real-time nodes and historical nodes, and then it will do some collection. Right now, we actually hit the broker because, I mean, for select queries, it's more straightforward to parallelize, and we're already working on it, in which you just ask the broker, okay, where are the segments for this query? And it will tell you, okay, this historicals and this real-time, and you just bypass the broker, and you go to these nodes directly, and you can parallelize execution. But for group by queries, top end, time series, it's more complicated because you might have to do some computation on your side after you have sent all these queries to Druid. So that's maybe in a bit of a longer term this work. And as I said, you might not be able to push all computation to Druid. Our contract is that the queries should be always executed. So if you cannot push it, you compute it on the Hive side, but you should always get results on these queries. So let's go. Let's explain this with an example, and I think it will become much more clear. So first of all, you have your input query, a SQL query that it's going to give you the top 10 users that have added more characters from the beginning of 2000 until the end of 2011. So 2010, 2011. So here what you can see is a select query with some aggregation from a Druid table. You have a where clause where you are specifying some filter on the time dimension, and then you are grouping by the user, ordering by the metric that you are calculating. That's why you will get the top 10. You order it descendant. So one cool thing that I want that you observe, and this is actually done by Calcite itself, is that you can specify your filter on the time dimension in a standard SQL, right? Or the ways that you want. So here, you are saying that I want to extract the year from the time and that the year should be 2010 or 2011. And this will actually, Calcite will recognize it and will translate it automatically into an interval that Druid can read. So that's quite cool. That's done underneath, and it also does some kind of consolidation. So if you have overlapping intervals, you actually create like a large interval. And then this is how it proceeds. So at the beginning, what we have is that the scan is executed in Druid by a select query, because this is what you can do, and that the rest of the query is executed in Hive. And then we apply, once again, rewriting rules. So these rewriting rules, what they will do is pushing computation into Druid, so each of them will actually match the Druid scan with one of the operators. It will check some preconditions, like I said. So for instance, in this case, it is a project, so you might check whether you are computing complex expressions and so on that you cannot push to Druid, and then you wouldn't do it. But in this case, it is a simple project with references, so you can do it. And you continue, and by the way, and it continues being a select query in Druid. And you continue doing the same. You apply another rewriting rule, and you will push the filter on the time dimension. And you do the same again, but in this occasion, you have push and aggregate. And now the Druid query became a group by, because that's the kind of query that you have to use to express these semantics. And finally, you can actually push the sort limit, order by a limit in Calcite. They are actually specified in a single operator. So you push the sort limit, and finally, the query becomes a top-end query. So this example is cool because, as you can see, you will be able to push all the computation into Druid, and actually, you will not even need to launch containers in Hive. So this is actually a very cool example in which, you know, you can push everything into Druid. Now, once you have done that, we have to go back to Hive, right? So we had this logical plan, and we will actually, the Druid query itself is translated into a table scan that uses our Druid input format and that contains the JSON query. So actually this, from this plan, we will map the, we will create the JSON query. We have some logic that will create the Druid JSON query. And then the rest of the plan in Hive will be actually translated into physical operators. In this case, there is only a sync, so you know we will create a file sync in Hive, and that's actually our physical plan. It's just a table scan, and on top of it, there is a file sync. And now if we go into detail into the Druid input format, what it will do is, as I said, it will submit the query to Druid and create records out of it. In the current version, we support, so we support time series, top end, group by, and select queries. In the current version, time series, top end, and group by, they are not partitioned. So as I said, we'll hit the broker node. Select queries, right now they are, they hit all the broker node, but they are partitioned along the time dimension. So like this, we kind of, although the broker is still the bottleneck, but we kind of get some parallelism. And what we assume here is that we can get actually for a certain query like the range on the time dimension. And what we assume is a uniform distribution in order to partition this into chunks. And the ongoing work is precisely that. This is here, you can see it more clearly. Time series, top end, and group by, only one broker node. For the select, one broker node, but right now we can actually split these queries and get some degree of parallelism. So I had prepared a small demo to show you wait a sec. There is one slide before the demo. The implementation will be in Apache Hive 2.2. The last version is 2.1, so there is no release plan right now. It's something that has not been discussed by the Apache community. I would say that probably it will happen first half 2017, even really at the beginning, because of the different time between releases that usually there is. Last release was June, and usually every 6 months we have a release. So I think it will come out soon. It relies on Druid 0.9.1.1, that is the latest stable release, and calcite 1.10. So all the logic about the optimization, logical optimization, is actually implemented in calcite. The current status, so registering Druid data sources is already checking in master. Creating Druid data sources from Hive, the patch is there, but we are waiting for the next release of Druid because we had actually to fix some stuff. So here you can see actually some collaboration between both communities. And querying Druid from Hive, it's already in master. However, bypassing the broker for Druid select queries the patch is also ready, but we are also waiting for the new release of Druid. And now, let me show you actually some. Okay. You can see it well, right? Okay. So yeah, I'm just, I have just prepared some queries, so. So yeah, I have some very simple table that I will use later for a join, but it doesn't have almost anything. Yeah, it has one record. So first of all, let's. So I have some data in Druid. Okay, some Wikiticker. Actually, it's Wikipedia events. Events that actually is distributed with Druid itself, and I loaded it actually, and I'm going to use the discovery mechanism because yeah, that will be much faster. So as I said, the only thing that you have to do is to create your external table, store by, you specify the Druid storage handler, that is what we have implemented, and then in the table properties, you specify the name. By the way, what we did previously, but I didn't show, I did previously, is defining the IP of the broker, okay? That's the only thing that I had to do. So okay, we have created our table. There is no materialization. It just does some query to Druid in order to check the schema of Wikiticker, and that's it. Then we can actually describe the table. So and here you can see actually the columns, right? So you'll have your timestamp, your time column. The ones that are that have a string type are dimensions, so channel, city name, comment, and then the other ones are metrics. So count, there's another one, deleted, delta, and so on and so forth. And you have some information that is actually specific to Hive tables, like you know the serializer and the deserializer that we use, and so on and so forth. So now we are ready to query our table. So, for instance, this is just a normal select query with a limit. And I mean, I just actually executed the explain plan so we can actually see what's going on here. So basically, we can push all the computation into Druid. And here you can see that attached to the table scan, you have your Druid query. So basically, you have it there. So it's type select, the data source is Wikiticker, and then some properties. Okay, the intervals, we do not filter on intervals right now. So it takes like the default that is from 1,900 till 3,000, I think. Yes, okay, the threshold, 10, because we specify a limit and we can push the limit into the select. And yeah, that's basically it. So we can execute our query. And we'll get some data, right? Some channel and delta. We can also filter on the interval. So as I said, there are multiple ways to express the filters. So here, for instance, we just choose to, or maybe a tool will choose to say that the time is between those two intervals or the time between another two intervals. And actually what we do is parsing that and consolidating it. And in this case, I mean, I don't have to explain much there. Just you can see that actually the intervals here are modified, right? So we can actually push the filter to the Druid storage handler. So yeah, we can run the query too. Doesn't make much sense. Okay, showing some channels. So now let's get to more interesting queries. So for instance, time series. So basically here, what we're gonna do is to, let me show it here maybe. We're gonna actually group or get the maximum other number of characters and also some sum on delta, and we group by the granularity hour. So actually we are gonna get one result for each hour. This is what we are saying here. And you know, this is actually recognized, this SQL query as a time series query. And if we execute it, I mean, these are all queries. This is the best case scenario, by the way. These are all queries that can be pushed completely into Druid. And you know, you will get some time series. If we go back, we said that we wanted granularity per hour. So you can see that we have 12 o'clock, 1, 2, 3. So you have your time series over here. Another kind that I showed was the top end. So basically, it's the same idea. Actually, let me show the execution directly. So actually, we want the top 10 per day for the for m that is the max on delta. So here you can see that actually they are sorted in descending order, and you have here the channels and so on and so forth. So you know these are all cases that actually when you have a BI tool or some kind of dashboard, these are actually the kind of queries that are emitted against the database. And yeah, just you know, I wanted to show that actually there can be cases where you cannot push all the computation into Druid. So basically, what I did here was embedding a Druid query within a join. Okay, so you have a join, and this will be on Druid, but this part is on Hive, so you cannot do anything about it. And if we actually run explain plan, okay, let me see if you can see it well, but basically you have the scan on Hive table, and then you have the other scan on Druid on which you push computation and you recognize that it's a top end query, and then you have a map join on top that will correlate these two relationships. And yes, this can also hopefully be executed. And actually, in this case, it should indeed launch some jobs because you have to basically to execute the join on the Hive side. Okay. It shouldn't run for very long. Obviously, latency in this case is higher because we have to launch these containers. In any case, I mean, what we are trying to do right now actually is to start working with these BI tools and to see actually where we have some stuff that maybe can be improved, some things that we are not pushing and we should, and really studying the kind of queries that actually these dashboards are emitting. So let's go back with that. Let's go back to the presentation, to the last part. Yeah, so road ahead. I'm not going to say much about this, but so, okay, we have to continue working on tightening the integration between Druid and Hive and Calcite. So Calcite, I mean, maybe I didn't talk enough about that, but it's actually what is powering the logical optimization itself. And we need actually to be able to recognize more functions because the more we recognize, the more we will be able to push into Druid and the better. And there is some work to do that we want to do. So as I said at the beginning, one of the goals of putting Hive on top of Druid is that you can actually do some operations that Druid cannot do itself, but you want to do them efficiently. So obviously we have to do some work on parallelizing the results retrieval from Druid and improving that aspect. Now, where does it fit? This is interesting in the like broader perspective with Hive and materialized views. And you know, for those that were here this morning, what I talk about this morning about materialized views. So think about materialized views in Hive, okay? And now your data is sitting on Hive. And what you will do is that you will create a materialized view in Druid where probably you will do some denormalization of your data, of your star schema, and maybe you can even pre-compute some, or you can do some kind of roll-up if you know that you will not need data at less than a certain granularity. And now you have this view there. And then the cool thing would be that you have the automatic input query rewriting, right? So these BI tools will not necessarily express the query using the view. They will express the query in the same way, but you will actually match this view with the query, the view that you store in Druid. You will rewrite it, and in that way, you will actually obtain results much quicker. So that's basically where this whole thing, I think, that it will click and it will bring great benefits for the community. And Yeah, that's it. There is more information about this in these two links if you are curious on how we have done things, what is the status here. You can keep track of it. And of course, if you want to get involved on this effort. So thank you very much. And questions?
Questions?
Yeah.
Hello. I'm interested, you gave a couple of examples where you have queries which cannot push down completely the computation, so part of the computation is computed within Hive itself. So, and I've been reading similar examples and stuff, and it's always difficult. I mean, that gives very difficult perception for the end user when he builds the query at the BI tool to realize what part is actually being pushed down, what is and sometimes it's slow, and the user can come to the conclusion that Druid is slow or something like that. So that this kind of lack of transparency is bothering me in general. So it hides how the thing gets computed, and you lose your security.
I mean certainly there is there is uncertainty. That's basically what you mean. Suddenly you emit a query and you say, okay, why this is not being pushed into Druid? So that I understand. As I said, hopefully we would be able to push everything into Druid. Also, you have to think that it depends also on your use case. If we actually focus on what I was talking about, on BI tools and dashboards, and you identify the kind of queries that these dashboards and BI tools are emitting, then it's much easier actually to kind of determine which performance you will get, because usually it's, even when the queries are quite random, but, they are auto-generated and usually they follow certain patterns. But it's true that if the user starts emitting queries against us, there is some, even it's not even about what you can push and what you cannot push, it's even with materialized views also you have some uncertainty, right? In the sense that you define your view and you're expecting that actually certain query will match the view and it will not. Yes, I mean, this is, we cannot do anything else about this than just trying to work on this and trying to actually match as many cases as possible and trying actually to, think also that maybe the improvements outweigh all this uncertainty, right? Because suddenly you will have queries. I mean, before maybe all queries were returning slow. Now you will have queries that will return rather quick. So, but yes, I mean, for sure there is some work to do there. And this is some work that we started, I think, maybe June, July. So there is still a lot of work in front of us. And it's also an effort, I think, by several people, and we hope we can push it forward. So,
any other questions?
Hey.
Yeah.
I have integrated in the last few months Druid with Hadoop,
okay,
both for indexing and storage.
Okay.
And I'm still not completely sure about the localization of the component. Do you manage one Hadoop cluster and a Druid cluster separately, or do you co-localize like the middle manager or this kind of components?
So we can manage them separately. So basically, for the indexing at the beginning, what we were thinking on doing, and even we had a preliminary system, was that it was kind of a hack, but it was quick in order to get the results. So what we were doing is we will materialize the results of the query really to HDFS, and then we will launch this indexing jobs, for instance, Hadoop, MapReduce, that will actually take this data and will create the segments and register them to the Druid metastore. So this was kind of initial implementation. Then what we do is actually kind of completely independent in the sense that, you have to have access to Druid metastore from the Hive cluster, but that's the only thing that you need, because we write the segments ourselves. If you're familiar with this, we use the appenderator interface. So we get it and we start fitting there the records, and then we actually materialize them to HDFS, and then we register these segments into the Metastore. That's when we actually need to some access to the Druid cluster, but in principle they could even leave. You see what I mean? Separate. There could be some separation. Yeah, it's not like we rely very heavily on the on Druid itself. We actually use Druid more as a library, and yes, of course we need access to the Metastore in order to register the segments. Yeah, I don't know if I answered the question. So yeah, that's what we do at that level.
Any final questions? Last question? Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you guys.
Please give a big round of applause.